Hey everybody, this is the Drive On Podcast, where we talk about issues affecting veterans after they get out of the military. I'm your host, Scott DeLuzio, and now, let's get on with the show.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in to the Drive On Podcast. Today, I have Diane DeLuzio, who is not only my mother, but also a Gold Star mother. We're going to talk about some of the things that she found to be helpful and also not so helpful throughout her grieving process after losing her son and my brother. So I'll let you introduce yourself and maybe talk a little bit about becoming a Gold Star mother and how that whole process kind of took place.
Hi. Yeah, thanks for having me. When both you and Stephen were deployed to Afghanistan in 2010, I worried because I'm a worrier. So I, even when there's something, nothing to worry about, I still worry. But what I worried about was that you were going to be deployed and you were going to miss the first year of your son's life and maybe bonding with him would be difficult. With Stephen, I worried about, I saw a picture of him smoking and I thought maybe he was going to become a smoker and wouldn't be able to quit. Those are the kinds of things that I worried about. I don't think I let my mind worry about tragedy where somebody lost a limb or worst case scenario, didn't come home alive. I didn't worry about those things, but that's what happened on August 22nd, 2010. We got a knock on the door and two uniformed soldiers were standing at our front door. And the first reaction was, which one? Because we knew why they were there. We just didn't know whether it was you or Stephen. And it was very difficult. Those first hours and days and weeks, especially the first hours and days, because you weren't home either. And as a mom, I was also worried about you and thinking, you know, you were there alone. But I also thought, I also came to learn that you weren't alone and neither was Steve when he died, because the Army or service in general, but I have come to know from the Army's perspective that they take care of you. I mean, they helped you to get home as quickly as you could. They provided an opportunity for you to escort Steve from Afghanistan. And I know that there were people who loved and cared for Stephen who were with him when he died. And as a mom, I didn't come to realize that until almost a year later. But it really was a healing thing for me to know that he didn't die alone. And that it is at that point that I really learned what a Gold Star mother was. Prior to that, I was a Blue Star mother times two, and I had a Blue Star flag hanging in my door. And a Blue Star just means you have members of your family are in active duty or in the service, and that was you and Steve. But after Stephen died, I joined a club that no one wants to join, but it's the Gold Star Mothers, and that's just someone who has lost a son or daughter in service to our country.
So after all that happened, so, you know, obviously Steve came home and, you know, we had, you know, all sorts of different, you know, services and things like that were presented to us, that were made available to us, you know, through the military. What were some of the things, some of the activities that you got involved with that you used to kind of help with that grieving process that you were going through? You know, some were probably more helpful than others, but what were some of those things that you tried to do to get through the dealing with the loss of your son?
Well, in the very beginning, I really wanted to be alone. That's the way I wanted to, you know, cry privately. I wanted to pray privately, whatever. I wanted to be private. I know that doesn't work for everyone. A lot of people, I did want to speak Stephen's name as often as I could, but I wanted to do it more on a private basis. But over time, and I would say the Army and the support staff that we had with our crisis assistant officers and whatever, they were there for that first year in whatever we needed. And I can't thank them enough for that, because they were wonderful. But really, after that year, I started to think, you know, now what? I don't want to sit around and just be sad all the time. I want to I want to be able to speak Stephen's name and talk about him and not make people feel uncomfortable, because some people are uncomfortable, but I wanted to be able to do some good with that. And actually, the original Gold Star mother, I think her name is Grace Siebold, she was one who actually would go to veterans' hospitals and talk to, you know, veterans who were recovering from injuries or whatever. She used that before her son was killed, but even after her son was killed, she continued to do good for the veteran community, and that helped her feel better. And so when I had researched her and her story a little bit, I decided I wanted to do the same thing, and I really wasn't sure what I wanted to do. I wasn't sure what I could do, but I just sort of, it was just by luck that I got in touch, someone got in touch with me, Sue Martucci, actually, who was the chairman at the time of the Connecticut Trees of Honor Memorial, and it was in its infancy stages. Sue had a vision to create a memorial in Connecticut to honor the fallen heroes from the Afghanistan and Iraq wars, the recent wars. And she contacted me and asked me if I would be interested in being the Gold Star liaison to the committee. That was it, just to run ideas by me to see whether or not, you know, anything would be possibly offensive or hurtful or, you know, insensitive to Gold Star families. And I agreed to do it. And we clicked off very good. The very first couple of meetings I went to, we had a connection. And over time, over the years, I started taking on more and more responsibilities in the Trees of Honor Memorial. And I found it very healing for me. I got to meet some wonderful Gold Star families, mothers and fathers and siblings, wives, husbands, and through our conversations and our willingness to work together to build this memorial, I think we were all starting our healing process. You mentioned some things that might not have been so helpful. There were other organizations, by the way, Fisher House and others that I also participated with, where I found it very healing. I met veterans, I met injured soldiers, veterans, and I helped to raise money for building and constructing Fisher House in Connecticut. And that was very rewarding and very helpful for me in my healing process. But what I didn't want to do, and occasionally found myself in a position of being sad, and of course I'm always going to be sad that Stephen was lost, and I don't know what he would be today. I don't know what his, if he would be, you know, have children or all of that. I miss that, and I'm sad for that. But I wanted my life and my efforts to go in a positive, uplifting way to help others. And so when I was around people who might be stuck in the sad, I found that sometimes that brought me to, you know, down a little. So I, one-on-one with those people, I was great, but in a group setting, that was hard for me, and that wasn't helpful for me. So I just, I sort of decided to do the things that were, that made me feel better, that I, and I always felt better when I was helping someone else. And so that's, those are the kinds of things that I did.
Yeah, and so I think a lot of the people that I've talked to so far for this podcast, and even outside of this podcast, but a lot of people who are dealing with grief or emotional type issues, whether it's PTSD or you know, the loss of a family member or whatever the case may be, it seems like a lot of these people have one thing in common, that doing something, being productive, and not just busy work productive, doing something, is what helps them kind of move on from whatever the pain is that they're going through. And not to say that it's going to erase the pain entirely, but it is sort of a way for them to help other people going through either a similar situation or, you know, just to feel like they're being helpful and being useful. And I want to say, like, going back to, you know, being in the military, you know, you volunteer. Everybody who's in the military right now is a volunteer. We don't have a draft anymore, like, you know, Vietnam era, you know, folks had the draft. You know, everyone is a volunteer. And I think that the people who do raise their hand and volunteer generally want to be helpful. They want to help their community. You know, the National Guard is, kind of community focused, where you're, serving on the state level, or they want to help their country, where there might be a conflict overseas, and they want to go and serve and protect their country and everything. But it seems like for you, there's a similar kind of correlation there, where you took a tragedy, an issue that you were going through, and you wanted to turn that negative into something positive. And, whether it was through the Connecticut Trees of Honor Memorial or the Fisher House or, other organizations that you worked with, it seems like you were trying to not just sit there and wallow in your own kind of misery. You wanted to get out and actually help someone and be productive, and that seemed to be the thing that kind of helped you out more than like isolation. Like you said in the beginning, you kind of felt like you just wanted to be alone and not be in the spotlight or whatever. So now, through these organizations, you mentioned that you have connected with other Gold Star families and veterans and things like that. And how has that helped you in terms of either your grieving process or your own, for your own benefit to kind of, move on from that sense of isolation where you're just kind of, hunkered down and not wanting to get out? How has it helped you to get out and connect with other Gold Star families or veterans or, other organizations, other family members and things like that?
Well, a big part of my healing was to meet and greet and hug some of Stephen's friends, some of his battle buddies. I saw their, especially the first meeting, I saw the pain in their eyes. And as I started to say before, that's when I realized that it wasn't just a death in our family. Stephen's life had touched a lot of people and a lot of people in a positive way. And so, meeting, greeting, talking to them, getting to know them, even being friends with some of them that we may not have otherwise have had the opportunity to meet. I realized hearing their stories about Steve, we telling our stories to them about Steve on the family side, even from the business where Stephen used to work, his business side, and sharing all of those stories, filled me with, pride, I guess, that Stephen was, was a lot to a lot of people. He meant a lot to a lot of people. I never served. I was never in the military. I never raised my hand. As you said, it's actually, I believe, less than 1% or 1% of the population that does. And sometimes I felt uncomfortable when I was maybe called a hero or they would thank me for my sacrifice. Because honestly, I didn't raise my hand. I didn't choose this sacrifice. But I wanted, at this point, since it was what it was, and we weren't going to get Stephen back, I wanted to make his life remembered. I'll never forget, but I wanted to make sure that I could speak his name so that other people would never forget. But I also wanted to make sure that the good that he was doing lived on. And I could do whatever I could do for veterans or for the community in general. I tried to volunteer and I did. I volunteered, as much as I could in order to try to make, I guess, the world a better place.
And yeah, so it seems like I know when I first got home, there were, and this is very similar to what Chris Weir, who was on a previous episode, had talked about after losing his brother. But there were newsstands lining our street outside of our house when I first got home. Like I literally hadn't even gotten out of the car from the airport, and there were already newsstands lined up on the street and everything, and from whether it was television or radio or newspapers, they had reporters from all over who were there. And I remember my initial gut reaction was like, screw these people. I don't want to talk to these people. And that was one of those things that I think was kind of sort of ingrained in me from when I was overseas, because on some occasions, some of the reporters who had gone over there, there had been cases where they took a story and kind of blew things out of proportion and didn't maybe report all of the situation, but it made for a great story. And so that's how they reported it. And so we always just felt like if there was a reporter around, we're not going to say anything. We're not going to do anything. We just are going to ignore them and everything like that. And so when we first pulled into the driveway and I saw those news vans, my gut reaction was just screw these people. I don't want to talk to these people because I don't know what they're going to say. And I don't know how they're going to twist this story. And I think I remember back to this time we were all sitting there in the car and trying to decide, like, what are we going to do? Is anyone going to talk to them? Are we going to just go inside and ignore them? What is it that we're going to do? And I remember that at one point we decided, you know, like, someone needs to tell, like, Steve's story. Like, he died, and then we're just going to, like, not let anyone know about him or his story. And, like, how wrong is that? And so that kind of goes into, like, what you were talking about, you know, talking to other veterans and always wanting to, speak about him, about Steven, and tell other people about him so that while, yes, he has died, his memory can continue to live on. It can continue to affect other people. We set up the memorial fund for, in his name, and it provides scholarships to kids and will continue to provide scholarships to kids for, many years from now. And, you know, so that, you know, it, while yes, he's passed away, he continues to touch other people and affect other people's lives going forward, throughout the years. Now, you've done other events where you spoke and, like Memorial Day type events where you spoke, you got up and did all those types of things. Were those kind of similar to like what you were talking about in terms of your, wanting to get his name out there like that? Those were more for Stephen more than they were for you to get his name out there than they were, for your own personal healing or whatever. Is that
right? Accurate? That's correct. Just to, kind of piggyback on your comment with the day we brought you home from the airport. The other part of the conversation that I recall is that one of the, I don't know if it was our casualty assistance officer who said that this is a story and the story is going to be told. The question is whether you want to add to the story, so you want to give your side of the story, or if you just want to let them tell the story. Because they did say that there will, there'll be somebody who was in third grade with Steve who they will get to interview, and that person will give us a sound bite. Do we want that, or do we want to give our story? So while I certainly wasn't able to talk at that point, we decided as a family that we would all go up there. And I think between you and Dad, you guys were able to, to speak. And again, that just start of saying Steven's name and talking about him from people who really knew him. And then you asked another part of the question. I forgot what you asked me.
No, that was good. That was kind of what I was getting at is that, that was more, for Steven, getting Steven's name out there than it was for your own healing. And, right. In the beginning, it was still a shock. So, it's understandable that, maybe you're not able to necessarily get out there and speak to the reporters and everything like that. But it was important to, for us as a family to tell his side of the story from our perspective, the people who, generally knew him the best, versus, like you said, like some kid from third grade who sat next to him and, knew that he liked to play, baseball or something like that. Like, that's like the not important kind of fluff stuff. Like, yes, that's true, but, we had more kind of depth to that and to make the story, just that much better, and get his, the down to the core of kind of who he was out there, into the newspapers and on the TV,
news reports and everything like that. That was kind of, to me, the most important part.
But this, the other part that you asked me about was, you know, the Memorial Day speeches and those kinds of things that, you know, that I continue to do since then. And I don't think of those as necessarily healing, except in the way that it makes me feel good that I'm able to, you know, speak to veterans, speak at Memorial Day ceremonies, speak at a scholar to a scholarship recipient that we've just given a scholarship, and talk to them about Steve. I don't know if you remember, but the first year after Steve died, I put together a little book because I wanted every scholarship recipient that we gave money to not just know that he got the Stephen J. DeLuzio scholarship, but who was Stephen J. DeLuzio. So,
right.
You know, there's pictures of Stephen playing Little League and golfing at St. Andrews and playing hockey for Glassbury High School and all that kind of stuff. So I put those things in them so that they would know that he wasn't just this Sergeant Stephen DeLuzio, but he was a man who had a brother and a mother and a father and fiance and et cetera, et cetera. So while they're not so much healing for me, but they do, you know, they do actually make me feel good that I'm able to continue to talk about him as Stephen, or right. Fifi, as we fondly called him.
Nickname as a kid, yeah. So kind of along the same lines of, you know, telling the same that story about Stephen and getting his kind of message out there and everything. Recently, we as a family, as a Gold Star family, we had the honor, the privilege of meeting the president, President Trump, and his wife at the White House in Washington, and I think we decided as a family that, like, this was something, not only was it, you know, an honor to meet the president and to be invited to the White House, but we were presented with an opportunity to represent Stephen and get his, you know, have his name be included in a ceremony, you know, at the White House, which to me, like, it doesn't really get any bigger of a stage than that.
Right.
But at the same time, the White House kept the event kind of quiet. Like, there wasn't a whole lot of publicity there. You know, even though the president is famous for his Twitter usage and everything like that, it wasn't, you know, tweeted out, you know, 18 million times or anything like that. It was, in my opinion, it was very respectful and very, you know, kind of well done. What were your thoughts about accepting this invitation first off, and what were your thoughts about going to the White House, you know, just in general?
Well, I don't think there was any question in my mind that when we received the invitation that we were absolutely going to go. It was an honor and a privilege to go, and I still sometimes pinch myself and, you know, think about how, you know, shaking the president's hand and Mrs. Trump as well, it was just an honor. Of course, the little part of me that feels a little guilty because I knew why we were there. It wasn't because of something that I did that got me there. It was something that Stephen did. And so, yeah, I felt a little guilty, and I think a little part of the day I was nervous because I felt as though I was getting put in this, I don't want to say hero, really, but that's kind of, they treated us like we were royalty, really. And so I felt like I wasn't deserving of that it was really, you know, it was Stephen's sacrifice and, you know, and even yours from the standpoint of being, you know, of having served our country, where I just, you know, had two patriotic boys. So I guess maybe that's my end of what I did for it. But again, there was never a question that we would have gone, because it was something that I felt was absolutely necessary to do, and also the honor for Stephen. He was recognized by the President of the United States in a ceremony. His name was read, etc., and it was just something that I'll never forget.
Oh no, absolutely. I don't think I'll ever forget that either. You know, it was such an incredible opportunity to go and do that, and you know, a great honor to have the president, you know, invite us to the White House for that event. But I think, like, so going back to what you were saying about how you felt like almost guilty about being invited to the White House because, like, what did I really do kind of thing. I feel like it's sort of that terrible price you have to pay to join that club. And it's one of those, like, it's the least that they can do kind of thing is to, you know, treat you with the respect that you deserve for having paid that price. Now you didn't, you know, push him into the army. You didn't tell him to go, and you didn't. As a matter of fact, you probably did more of the opposite, you know, with the worrying and everything like that. Not to say that you discouraged anyone from joining the military, but you know, the fact that from that day forward, you lost your son, and now he's not here anymore the way he would have been had the country not asked for, you know, his service. You know, it's sort of, you know, kind of the least that they could do, I feel, is what their kind of mindset was by having this type of event, which, as far as I know, they've done every year since President Trump has taken office.
That's my understanding, too. It's the third. This was the third year.
Yeah. So do you have any other either words of wisdom or advice or whatever for people who are in your situation, in terms of people who are now having their mothers and their sons or daughters are just joining the military, and they're going out to basic training, and they have that same kind of worry that you had, or even Gold Star parents. You know, there are people who probably are still dealing with, you know, the emotional struggles and everything like that. And maybe they haven't necessarily figured out what they need to do to kind of get through and I hate saying move on with your life, but because that's not what you do. You can't just move on. That's a big part of your life that's missing. But to be able to live a happy life and do that type of thing.
Well, there's really two things. One starts actually even before you hear of a tragedy like this. What I did personally with both your unit and Stephen's unit is I became active in the support groups back home. So with the Connecticut National Guard and the Vermont National Guard units, because Stephen was actually his second deployment, I had been part of like a phone tree where they would call me and check in on me the first time Stephen was deployed to Iraq in 2006. When you guys were deployed in 2010, I became that lead person for the Vermont group. And I would call every week. I would call every other week. But, you know, every week I would, on a Friday, I would make phone calls to different families and just check in, see if they'd heard from their son. All the people in my unit happened to be, you know, men that were deployed. So I'd call and ask about their son. Had they heard from them? And there was, in a couple cases, they hadn't received letters or phone calls or whatever. So, you know, we looked into it to see if there was just because, you know, they didn't have a phone or whatever. So that was just a contact to let them know that they weren't there alone. And with yours, because this was your first deployment with the Connecticut National Guard, your wife and I, Vicky, would go to the meetings, and, you know, there were, you know, pasta suppers where people got together and, you know, shared news or whatever. But it was just a community thing. You got to know other people. And so there was some sort of camaraderie there. But the other thing that helped me, and this was actually probably during deployment and post-deployment, that I'll preface it with just a real quick story. When Stephen was at Norwich University in Vermont, which is a military academy, he had limited access to phones, so he couldn't call home very often. But on one of his phone calls, he said that he had just come back from Mass, church. And he said that, you know, he went to Mass as often as he could when he was there. And he said to me that while I am a Catholic and I went to church pretty regularly, there were some days that, you know, because of schedules or whatever, I missed Mass. And Stephen actually said to me, he said that, "I think you should start going again." He told me that. He said, "Because I really think the church and your faith will come in handy someday." And so, you know, right now I'm actually even getting chills on my arms because he was 100% correct. The family that we, at the time we were living in Connecticut, and the family that of, you know, I'll even mention them by name, you know, Father George and Sister Mary became friends of ours. They were from St. Johnston's Parish in Glastonbury, Connecticut. They became friends of ours while you guys were deployed. And they were very, very helpful to me in being able to, you know, comprehend and process all that was happening. Knowing that, you know, you were so far away. I mean, they were there. They were there to greet us and to hug us, you know, almost immediately when we got the news. And we continue to this day, almost 9 years later, to still be friends with them. And they, my faith in the faith community was very important to me. And it may not be for everyone. It may, you know, depending on, you know, your own beliefs. But for me, that was a very big part of my healing. And the, you know, the veteran community, family, and my faith and the faith community were very, very instrumental in my process of grieving and healing.
That's good. I didn't know some of that stuff actually about, you know, Steve telling you that and everything. That's interesting. Cause I know when he was deployed, he did, you know, they were on a small kind of remote base and they didn't really have, you know, religious services or anything like that, like some people might have on a bigger base or whatever. And I know he was, from various stories from other people, I know that he had done some things, you know, to try to help with, you know, some sort of service, whether it was, you know, an officially, you know, having a, you know, a chaplain there or anything like that, or if it was just, you know, talking to other people or whatever. And I don't know the details of everything, but I know he kind of was involved with that a little bit too. So, so that's awesome. So, well, anyways, thank you for, you know, sharing your story and your side of, you know, kind of everything that happened and your, the grieving process and those activities and the other things that you've done that were meaningful and helpful, productive for you. You know, thanks for sharing all of that. And so we look forward to, you know, maybe hearing a little bit more about, you know, this type of stuff in the future as well. So thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Drive On Podcast.